You're listening to Real People of Orange County, and I'm your host, Kimberly Martin. This show is a fun and informative look inside the lives of Orange County's best and brightest. These are people who serve their community in a meaningful capacity on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. Well, welcome. I am so happy to be here in the studio again today. This is our September 26th edition of Real People OC. So welcome back to our weekly review of interesting folks in Orange County. I am always happy to be presented with somebody new and exciting, and today is no such exception. We will get to delve into an area that, we haven't really covered, but I think so many people are affected by this. So I'm excited to share with you today's guest. Now, if you're tuning in to Real People OC on a regular basis, I just want to let you know that here at KUCI, we make it really easy for you to participate in our programming. We have a fabulous website, kuci.org, and on that station, on that website, you can go in and check in on any of the shows that we do here on our weekly programming and podcast. So if you don't get to hear us the first time all the way through, but you want to capture the information or listen to the songs, you can go through and podcast one of our shows, and that's a pretty wonderful thing that we've got going here. So we put together some great programming. We've got a wonderful lineup here, and we invite you to indulge and enjoy as often as you like. And if you want to repeat a show or pick up an old show, you can go do that at kuci.org. And if you want to read a little bit about our guests that we have here at Real People OC, you can also go to our website at realpeopleoc.com and look up to see who we've had, and then go pick a podcast and listen away. I don't know about you, but I listen to a lot of programming here at KUCI. I listen to Writers on Writing, Ask a Leader. I listen to the Film School. So there's a lot of great programming, and we welcome you to enjoy it on a frequent and regular basis. If you want to, you can also go to iTunes and search College Radio, and that's another way you can get us. So if you're not in earshot with 88.9 FM here in Irvine, there's lots of different ways you can partake in our programming. So with that being said, I want to introduce today's guest, and I have in the studio with me Dr. Zhu Yung Lee, and she is the founder and CEO of the Daily Momo. And we're going to delve into that. Daily Momo is an app that she developed in probably record speed. And we're going to talk about how Daily Momo solves an English as a second language frustration that a lot of people that come and try to learn English have to deal with. So, Dr. Lee, thank you so much for coming. Say hello to everybody here in the studio and at large.
Hi, everyone.
Good. Okay. Say that again. I want to make sure I've got you.
Okay.
Okay. Perfect. Just come out. Just let it out.
Hi, everyone.
There you go. Okay. Good.
Thank you for having me here.
It's wonderful to have you. I am so excited about the research that you sent my way. But I understand that today's topic of learning English as a second language here in the United States came with some extreme challenges for you. And I mean, you're a woman on a mission, and the cause that you've taken up, I think, is no small task. I think over the years, we have attempted to, as a community, to help people integrate into English. And all I can think of is, as I'm teaching my kids English now, I don't even know, I don't know how to teach my own kids English, let alone somebody who is not a native speaker. So you've had some challenges. You're going to share with those today. And so let's start talking about your personal story, because I think that's a really great place to start.
Great. So I understand this is Welcome Week for UCI.
Yes,
so
it is.
Many thousands of international students welcome. I was just like you many years ago. I came here to go to graduate school from Korea. And I learned English in Korea from Korean English teachers.
Okay, that's an important nuance, isn't it?
And I was a good student. I did everything they told me to do. And I took all the tests and I aced them all. So when I came here, just like all of these new international students today on campus, I was quite confident in my English skills. I thought I was really good. And that dream, that illusion was shattered completely the first day.
On the first day?
On the first day. Okay. It was completely gone.
So take us back. When was this?
It was many years ago.
I probably shouldn't ask questions like that. I'm a smart enough woman in her 40s that we don't really give up that information very easily as time wears on.
I know. So okay. It was many years ago.
We'll just say a ways back. How about
yes.
that?
And I came here right after graduating from college in Korea. And I went to a class, and I could not believe myself because I could not understand anything.
So you had prepared yourself in the best way you thought you could, and you got here, and it was like Greek. It was just a language you'd never heard, probably.
Exactly. So I came here with 100% on every test they threw me at. So there is a test called TOEFL, and I know there are a lot of students who came here today, took all those TOEFL tests, and I got 100% on that. So I thought I was good. And I thought my English was the English that I needed. And when I came here, I realized that my quote-unquote English was not the English that I needed.
So you were woefully unprepared in a way that you couldn't have expected because of the high marks you were receiving.
Exactly.
Right, right. It's a challenge. You know, it's funny because I can only share a small common experience with this. My husband and I, in 2002, we moved to Australia. And we were there to start a business. And we thought, oh, you know, how hard could this be? We're going to an English-speaking country. We love tea. You know, hey, we're set. And we get over there in Australia. We understood the accent. We thought it was cute. We would mimic it every now and then. Hello. And we would get there. And the moment we started doing business in there, we'd pick up the phone. And I'm telling you, I couldn't understand English to save my life. I'm on the phone. They're speaking at a rapid pace. They're using words that, albeit English, they were words that were not part of our vernacular, so we didn't use them very often. They had nicknames for everything, so they were not translated easily into our normal, you know, cliche-ridden language here. It was troubling. I was so frustrated because I couldn't understand anybody on the phone in particular. So let alone to be a student where you not only were starting from a place, but you then had to learn. So let's go to what the famous story is for you, the Sesame Street story, and how this came to put you into a woman of action.
Okay. So I really felt that my English was not adequate enough to do anything in graduate school. So after some soul searching, I went to my advisor and I told him that I thought I was ready, I thought I was prepared, but I realize now that I'm not. So please bear with me. My English is not as good as I thought. It's going to take some time for me to catch up with the classwork. I may not participate in class discussion. And if you can help me improve my English faster and better, let me know. That would be great. And he thought about it and he said, yeah, I can understand. And it's really horrible that English is difficult to learn. And then he paused and he said, you know what? Try watching Sesame Street.
Oh, my.
So at that time, I didn't know what that was. So I had to find out what Sesame Street was and what time that was on. So next morning, I turned it on and I saw what the program was. And all of a sudden, I felt and I actually saw all of my life plans, ambitions, dreams falling apart.
Oh,
because
crushing.
What that meant to me was that I was reduced. I thought I was this intelligent, you know, 23-year-old, ambitious, international cosmopolitan girl from Korea. And 5 minutes into Sesame Street, watching Sesame Street, I was reduced to a five-year-old who is completely clueless about anything. And what that also implied was, in my advisor's eyes, I was only a five-year-old girl who cannot communicate anything.
And do you suppose that it came across as a well-intentioned suggestion from your advisor, or was he experiencing some frustration as well?
I think it was well-meant. I mean, he didn't mean anything ill. He was really trying to help me.
Yes.
And I probably had a really heavy accent. He couldn't probably understand what I was saying. He was trying to, you know, piece some stuff together and trying to guess what I was saying.
Right.
And he really meant well. He probably meant that, you know, if you really want to improve your accent in English, start from the beginning. Go back to Sesame Street.
Interesting. Yeah.
I didn't understand that, though. It was difficult for me to accept. And
I think Sesame Street started when I was one or two. It happened in the 60s. The late 60s was when it came on air first. And it was a huge part of several generations of young people's exposure to language and exposure to speaking. I mean, it's really interesting that it would even be considered a source for teaching English as a second language. I'm not sure that it would be anything that we would suggest today, but you were crushed.
I was, and don't get me wrong. I think Sesame Street is a wonderful program.
Yes,
it's a great program for, you know, children to watch and learn all kinds of stuff. It was just a difficult thing for me to accept, because what I saw was A for Apple, and I thought to myself, oh my God, this is where I have to start.
Now, take me back to that moment when you were saying your ambitions were crushed. What were they? What did you want to come to this country to accomplish when you were bright-eyed and young?
I was majoring in psychology.
Okay.
And the reason I got interested in psychology was because I wanted to understand Hitler.
Ah.
And I could not fathom how that could have happened in a country like Germany.
Yes.
And my ambition was to figure out what happened, why that happened, and what we can do to prevent that from happening ever again.
So you came with a very important goal in mind.
I thought so.
Yes. Yes. And okay, so take us from that moment. What did you do? You pulled your bootstraps up, and it looks like you managed to go on about things. Tell me about the journey from that point on.
Well, first, I fell into deep depression. It was so frustrating, so crushed. I had to decide whether, you know, I stay here or I go back. It was that shocking to me. It was a physical shock to me. So I fell into depression, and then I thought to myself, well, either I crack, sort of, quote-unquote, the English code, or I change my plan. Without conquering the English problem, I would not be able to achieve what I came here to achieve. So after a while, I thought, okay, well, there are hundreds of millions of people are speaking English.
How hard can it be?
Exactly. It's not going to the moon. So it's worth trying. And luckily, I was a psych major, so I knew all those, you know, journals, scientific journals, and where to find them, how to find them, how to find the scientific research papers. So I hit the library. And I just read and read and read, and whatever I found as effective language learning method, I experimented on myself. I used myself as a research subject, And I tried everything.
And did you meet with some walls?
Yes, a lot. Mm. A lot.
Now, were you trying traditional programming or were you taking more classes as you got here?
No, actually, I did just everything myself.
Okay.
One teaching I got was from a speech therapist. So I worked with a speech therapist who worked with stroke victims.
Mm.
And I tried to learn how you can rewire your brain to learn a language. And that language happens to me to be English.
Mm.
One of the things that I found really, really helpful was asking my American friends, classmates, read aloud for me any newspaper articles, anything. Just pick something up, read aloud for me, but not like passive reading aloud. It's more of reading aloud while underlining the text that she was reading.
Hmm.
So when I tried that, I saw the light. It was as if somebody turned on lights in the middle of dark tunnel. And that's because that was the first time I felt like I could see the words I was hearing.
So you needed to see and hear at the same time for your brain to create that synapse and that
right.
connection.
So that's when it clicks. Otherwise, just like your experience in Australia,
yes.
when you're listening to another language, just on the phone or just a radio, oftentimes it's just a series of noise. It's a cacophony.
Right.
I could not differentiate different sounds. And when I had a friend read aloud text while underlining the text, now I could make connection between sound and written words. And that's when my brain clicked.
It probably also clicked into how complicated English really is, because it's just one of those languages where there's an extreme disconnect to the way the word looks and the way it sounds.
Exactly. And that was more difficult for me because Korean language is not like that. So Korean, Japanese, Greek, Spanish are the kind of language that you pronounce everything that's written.
You give every vowel and consonant its equal just due.
Right.
That's right.
And because English is not like that, it was really hard for me to make connections between sounds and written text. And when a friend read aloud while underlining the text, I could see what I was hearing.
Huge connection. You know, I can call upon a recent experience where my husband and I went to Italy, so I went and grabbed language tapes. I don't remember which program it was, but I listened to them. I can speak Spanish because being a native to Southern California, it's a language we pick up easily here. We have lots of opportunities to practice. But Italian, not so much. So it's very similar to Spanish, and I was able to pick up rather quickly just through the listening method. And then I tried French because I was going to a trip to France with our older daughter. And French, not so much. I really missed the connection of seeing the word as I was hearing it and as I was attempting to pronounce it. So take us a little bit into the science of this, because I think you've stumbled onto something in this struggle that you've had. I want to hear a little bit about the science behind that connection of seeing and saying and hearing at the same time.
So clicking between sounds and seeing the words was actually proven by neuroscientific research recently. It's been only about 7 or 8 years ago they found this. And there's a area in our brain called visual word form area. And they found that area gets activated when you hear and see the words at the same time. And Also, when you look at the brains of a literary person, that area gets activated a lot. But if you look at the brains of an illiterate person, there's no activity there.
Interesting. Okay, so this VWFA, the visual word form area, is an actual spot they mapped out in the brain.
Yes.
They look at activity. They do it through, is that through like a thermography or how do they do that?
fMRI. They see it through fMRI.
Okay. And they show greater activity with those that are really productive with this method and less with those that aren't. So did you submit yourself to a study or you just happened upon this later on after you did struggling the hard way?
I struggled the hard way and I kind of, you know, tested myself and went through the process. And then I saw this research paper. It's like, oh, this is what happened to me.
This area was not purple and pink. It was, what color? Brown.
There was no activity when I first came here, and then now there are a lot of activities.
Interesting. Okay, so tell us a little bit more about this study.
So they actually looked at the human brains and show some text to illiterate people, literate people, a different kind of text that they don't understand. And they just compared, they look at the activities there. And they also found that when there's a sound accompanying the text, there are more activities.
So they need to hear as they're seeing in order to have the synapse occur.
For an illiterate person to acquire the language, yes.
Now, when you say this area is word form area of the brain, did they do studies to see if this area of the brain synapsed for other reasons other than word formation, or was it just related to language itself?
For now, they are focused on language acquisition.
Language acquisition.
So the theory goes that our language, human language, is very, very recent phenomenon in evolution. And they found that every language follows certain visual rules. And those visual forms are very similar to those found in nature.
Oh, fascinating. Okay, give me an example of that. Let's talk about that.
So there are shapes of A's and B's and C's. If you reduce those A's and B's and C's of all human languages, you can see shapes of rocks and leaves. So a lot of things that you see in nature, that we just humans reduced them and made them abstract, and we're using them as alphabets.
Interesting. So did studies come along to study alphabets in all different languages to make comparisons to see if they came to the same conclusions?
Yes, there is a study.
Because as a layperson, I would look at the alphabet of other cultures and think, huh, I got nothing. I got nothing, and I don't see any corollaries. So how?
There are commonalities that they found across all human languages, and they also found shapes and forms that are very common in nature.
Okay. All right. Can you give me some examples? Can you think of any off the top of your head?
Like the letter T.
Okay.
That form is present in every human language.
And does it in every human language represent a T or the sound T?
Yes. And it's the shape, it's like rock corner.
Okay. Now, this maybe is more your area, or perhaps not. But tell me if I'm straying too far from the subject. These languages then didn't influence each other in their development. They happened separately on their own. Their alphabets came and then were later available for comparison, or were they influencing each other way back when they were forming their own alphabet for each individual society that was developing language?
Well, nobody knows for sure, but the theory is that we humans imitated shapes and forms from the nature. So because we share the same environment called the Earth.
Yes.
We kind of have the same
relationship to it, really.
Reference, right, reference points.
Yeah. That's actually really exciting.
And
is there a name for that particular part of these studies?
I can't remember the name of the study.
Okay.
But that's the reason why seeing written words helps so much when you're learning a second language. You have to see it and then hear it at the same time. Then you make the connection.
Okay, wonderful. Okay, so if you're just tuning in, this is Real People OC, and I'm your host, Kimberly Martin. And I have with me in the studio Dr. Zhu Yong Li. And Dr. Li is the founder and the CEO of Daily Momo. Daily Momo, we're going to delve into that a little bit more in the second half hour. It is an app for developing language learning in English as a second language for here in the United States. This app, we're going to talk about all of its particulars in a little bit. But right now, we're discussing some of the science behind why we need to take a new approach to learn English as a second language in our culture, and really how the methods that we've applied so far have failed us. Wouldn't you say, Dr. Li, that you had to do everything the hard way?
Yes.
Yeah, the struggle for you and for so many. Let's talk a little bit about that. Did you find people that were struggling with you?
Everywhere. Our founding team members consist of people like me. So our CTO, Chief Technology Officer, is from Mexico. And he came here when he was 13. And because he didn't speak English, he was put into a special ed class.
Okay.
And only when the teacher, a semester later, only when a teacher discovered that he could spell Wednesday, he was moved to a regular class.
Huh.
And this kid was extremely, extremely smart and intelligent, very bright kid, but he could not express himself. We have a designer who's from Brazil, who could not express himself artistically because of the language barrier. We have another team member who is actually British, but he had a similar experience as we did because he lost his language ability after suffering from two strokes.
So had English, lost English, and
then he had to start from ABC. He started from Sesame Street.
Oh,
at the age of 45.
I wonder if the producers of Sesame Street knew how important of a task they were attempting to achieve when they put Big Bird up there in front of all of our kids. Interesting, very interesting. I'm suffering from a bit of a cold, and I apologize if you're hearing me sniffle and cough in the background, but I'm doing my best to get through the first, the cold the kids brought home from school. So, okay, if you're just tuning in, this is 88.9 FM in Irvine. This is KUCI, and we are in our public affairs block talking to Dr. Li, and she's sharing with us the development of a new way of looking at language and learning. And so this is exciting science. Can you talk to us a little bit more about what else has come out about the concept of mindful learning and the visual word formation?
Sure. So the visual word formation visual word form area is really seeing the neurological pathway to learning another language. And most of us learn English as a second language as an adult. Even if you're a child, it's more about after you learn your native language, so you have certain level of language skills and language structure already acquired. And once you're at that stage, learning a second language could be a little bit easier. But because there's not an easier way to introduce yourself to the second language, learning a second language becomes more difficult.
Is there a bit of unlearning that has to take place?
Yes. And that unlearning is really translation. When we learn another language, we tend to automatically go to translation route. So I say something in Korean, and then I think, like, how do I say this in English? Then I try to translate that. And that's a dangerous path, because every language is different. And when you're, there's no direct translation that's perfect. So when you're trying to translate something, you're actually blocking the learning path.
Okay, that's interesting. You kind of are taking the long road around when really you could take the shortcut.
Right. So the shortcut is just experiencing and trying to communicate everything from A to Z in that new language. And that way, you're helping your brain to kind of create a new path. So it's more like a switch. So you turn your French switch and you turn your English switch. Never going back and forth.
Right. Okay. So I remember when I was studying Spanish, they said, if you can dream in Spanish or think in Spanish, that means you've learned the language. And I remember the time when I actually started to experience, you know, thinking, and I don't know if I so much dreamed in it, but I definitely was having thoughts in the foreign language that I was attempting to learn.
So that's where a path has been created.
It just doesn't make sense why it would be so hard. Because it's something that we teach little teeny tiny people to do, is to learn a language. And yet, like you said, that unlearning almost has to take place. There was a story that you had, and I'd like you to share it, the Olympics, when English clicked for you. Tell us about that.
So
and what led up to that as well?
So I was struggling for, you know, I devoted myself to learning English or cracking the English code. And I spent like 4 or 5 hours every day trying to teach myself English, the English that I needed. And then as you know, it doesn't happen every, you know, real fast. 6 months go by, you feel like, oh my God, nothing's really improving. I don't know if this is working. What should I do? And then maybe a year or so later, one day, I was having a conversation with my American friend, and I realized conversation was moving. It's flowing. There's no awkward moment. There's no quizzed look in my American friend because I said something that she couldn't understand.
They weren't having to translate either then.
No.
At that moment.
So at that time, I realized that conversation is moving forward. That means I was able to communicate well, and they could hear me well. So the conversation is happening the way it should.
Right, right. Now, you wrote in your bio that you didn't have to smile a lot to mask the lack of understanding. I definitely want to touch on that a little bit, because it certainly is an area where we as a society could develop some compassion and, you know, share in maybe a struggle that somebody is experiencing. You know, so many people make fun of somebody when they're smiling and just saying yes, 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 but they don't really recognize the struggle going behind the smile to attempt to relate to the person that's talking to them. And what would you say about that? There's so much there that we could talk about.
I'll just, tell my story. So I smiled a lot, and I should probably smile more now, but I smiled a lot to hide my lack of understanding, lack of English skills. And I smiled because I didn't want to be rude. I didn't know what to say.
Right.
I couldn't ask them to say something again. I couldn't ask them to repeat.
Yes.
And there's a cultural reason why Asian people do not ask you to repeat. And then that is, in Asian languages and Asian cultures, the burden of understanding is on the listener. It's not on the speaker. And it's because the culture is like that. If you don't understand, then there's something wrong with you.
Hmm.
So Asians are reluctant to ask you to repeat what you just said, because it's admitting that I could not understand. And so it's kind of a combination of, I don't want to ask you to repeat because I didn't want to appear to be an idiot.
Or maybe not a respectful listener.
Right.
Yeah. It's an important thing to share, because I think as our cultures come together more and more, and certainly as the Asian community grows in our local culture and certainly in the United States, understanding those cultural subtleties is so critical, because I think people, very well-meaning people, really want to communicate and want to share thoughts. It's one of the most exciting things you can do is share thoughts about yourself and your own country with somebody new. And the graciousness of the smile that you gave to those folks that were speaking and hoping to communicate is beautiful, but also giving me that understanding now that that the burden is on the listener certainly helps me have more compassion in the way I speak and communicate when I'm wanting somebody to understand what I'm saying. If you were to give any advice to the speaker, if you will, since you were so often in the capacity as the listener, what kind of advice could you give that they can share to be a compassionate participant in a discussion that really involves a language barrier?
A lot of Asian people who come here, they're highly educated.
Yes.
And they have high level of comprehension skills when it's shown in text. So I would flip the coin. And yes, I would say, if you want to communicate with an Asian person who's maybe not fluent in English, then I would show the text and discuss the text while you're speaking.
Nice.
Write something down so that they can see text.
Okay. So this whole concept of looking at the words as they're being spoken or being shared, let's say your students on campus here, and this situation probably really comes up a lot at UCI. We have a huge Asian population here, and we're speaking to that today so that we're sharing them some of the struggles that you've had. But more importantly, giving some advice to those that are native speakers that can share understanding with their classmates to show text. But this really helped you to develop this concept of intelligent navigation for English learning. Is that a big jump to say, or could we start talking a little bit about that? Because this is what helped you lead to the really rapid development of Daily Momo.
Sure. So making connection between sounds and text was the most difficult thing for me to crack. It took me a while, and it took me a lot of annoying my classmates to read stuff out loud for me. There's a second thing that was incredibly difficult for me, and it comes naturally to native speakers, and that is understanding what they call a semantic unit. So when I say a semantic unit, you, native speaker, naturally lump those three words together, a semantic unit. So you lump them together and process it as one unit.
Of understanding.
Of understanding.
Yes.
It's impossible for second ESL students to get that.
Okay, so how do you as an ESL student process that?
So when I try to understand that, I literally took every sentence and I had my own diagram and I rearranged visually. I would use my pencil, I would rearrange different letters and different words into different sections.
Okay.
And so what we did here with the app is we show those semantic units in one highlight.
Pulling it out from the text?
Yes. So when you use our app, you'll see what we call a moving highlighter. And the moving highlighter moves at the speed of semantic unit, not at the speed of audio, and visually at the speed of a semantic unit, not word by word. If you look at word by word, it becomes really impossible for you to, an ESL student, to process a semantic unit of understanding that's really common in English.
Okay, can you give me some other examples of a semantic unit?
A lot of phrases like in spite of something, it's a microphone on the table. All those are phrases are a semantic unit. So as an ESL student, when I look at a sentence like there's a cup of coffee on the table, I look at it, there is a cup of coffee on the table. So it's 10, 11 words. And when you look at the semantic units, it's there's a cup of coffee on the table, only three.
I see.
So that's how ESL students have to get used to processing English. And when they get used to processing English that way, then they can use English that way.
So that's where the big jump is. It's not so much in sitting down and learning vocabulary. It's really in the synthesizing it into these chunks of communication bites, if you will, that is where people get really tripped up.
It's actually called chunking.
Oh, it is.
That's
called
a technical term,
okay,
chunking.
Okay, good. All right, so we're talking about the apps. So first of all, it's important to say that you went on to have an amazing career. Do you want to touch on that really quickly to let people know what you were able to become after you went through this huge struggle?
So I went through this struggle and kind of cracked the English code, and I was able to communicate freely in English. And then I kind of forget, you know, it's human. We're all human. So I kind of forget, forgot about how difficult it was.
Like pregnancy, you forgot all the pain.
Exactly. And then moved forward with my life. So I got my degree. I started my career in market research industry and got a job and went through, climb up the ladder, corporate ladder thing. And then one day I realized I really wanted to create something for myself. And I wanted to do something that nobody has ever done. And I had an idea. And that was measuring the effectiveness of TV commercials, but in a standardized way. So in the market research industry, there's a lot of money spent on measuring the effectiveness of TV commercials. But what has been done was that a client hires a market research company to do research on their commercials. And it's really expensive and time consuming. And because it's so expensive, the clients could not get the data on their competitive commercials.
Okay.
So we came up with the idea of kind of creating FICO credit score for all TV commercials.
Ah, very cool analogy.
So we did that. We created FICO scores of TV commercials.
Okay, so you didn't have to do the next step. I mean, you had a very satisfying career. You came here, you conquered English, you used your graduate studies, and you became successful in your own right, wouldn't you say? So from that place, how did Daily Momo come into play? What brought you back to that really painful place?
Because it's actually, it started from a very casual conversation. So in that advertising effectiveness measurement company, we had a board meeting. And at the end of the board meeting, one of our venture capital investors just asked me really casually, so how did you study English? Why do you sound different from the person I just met last week from Korea and China? And that got me thinking. And then that got me thinking about, that was difficult. How did I do that? And then I actually did market research on what's available now, what has changed, what's being offered now.
In the English learning, English as a second language learning modalities.
Okay. Right. And then I saw that nothing really has changed that much. I mean, there are new technologies. There are new social network type ESL learning method. For example, you can actually use Skype now to have one-on-one tutoring sessions. instead of actually meeting a tutor in person.
Huh.
But in terms of helping ESL students see the words they hear, there was nothing really available.
And so nothing that you came across actually put it all into play the way you finally were able to do it.
Exactly.
Okay. So this whole app thing came about really quickly. Let's talk about that.
So once you had an idea, and then we put, you know, got a team together, and as I mentioned earlier, our team members have all similar experiences, EXL experiences and frustrations, and their, you know, know-hows as they struggled to learn English. So we kind of gelled together and started coding.
Coding as in writing the program?
Writing the program.
Okay. All right. So the most important components to you in the program are, will you want to break it down for us a little bit?
So there's a, first there's a programming part. And first you have to kind of decide what the app should do, or how it should do.
How it should solve the particular problem of
right.
the English as a ESL learner.
So we, so there's a deciding what to do, kind of planning stage, and then there's a programming stage, and then there's a design stage, because if it has to be easy to use. And then after we have the kind of basic structure, and then we decide, we had to decide, okay, then what text do we use for this English app? We didn't want to use grammar book as our English text.
The way all the other ones do.
Right.
Yeah.
And we didn't want to create some scenario-based app. For example, there are a lot of apps like Rosetta Stone that's scenario-based. You create a scene.
Everybody's traveling, everybody's eating, and everybody's going to the bathroom.
Right. And guess what?
Right?
Nothing like that really happens exactly like that
well,
in
and
real
even
life.
If it did, we didn't need to talk about it. I mean, we can read the signs, folks. We can get ourselves to the bathroom.
Exactly.
In any country. I'm a living example of that.
So we decided to use newspaper articles.
I love that concept. So you took all relevant, timely news and put it into your app.
Right.
Fabulous.
And because of our location, we have access to fabulous Hollywood talent.
Oh,
of all
yes,
those voice actors and sound engineers, sound designers. So we're lucky to have them in our team producing those content every day.
So they come into the studio and read news?
Yes.
Okay.
And then
now
our software converts that into synchronized chunks.
Ah,
so when our users use our app, they hear the professionally recorded sound read by a real human being, and they can see the words, and they can see them in chunks.
So as the speaker or the person on the app is reading the article, the highlighter will brush over the words, and that's where the synthesis takes place.
Yes.
Now,
and it happens, you know, automatically. So it's intuitive to you. You don't have to, as a user, you don't have to figure out. It does that for you so that your brain can make the connection instantly without putting much effort out.
Okay. So your scientific advisor, Harvard University Dr. Ellen Langer, tell me about her contribution of mindful learning. Explain that to me, how that works.
So her theory is that when you're in learning environment, you have to have combination of something new and something a little familiar.
Hmm, okay.
So the familiar content provides a context so that it promotes learning. And that's when the newspaper article where the newspaper articles come in. So it's interesting content, it's happening today. So that kind of preps your brain to learn. And the English experiencing in our app, because you are already a little bit familiar with English, this app is not for true beginners. If you are true beginners, this app is not for you. But all of UCI students, international UCI students, are not true beginners.
No, they're educated and they're here attending college, so they wouldn't be considered a beginner, would they?
No. So their familiarity with some English is already baked in when they read newspaper articles. So we are helping them learn English words, English sounds that are not familiar to them.
One of the things that I loved about Daily Momo, let me just say this. If you want to look into this a little bit more, you can go to www.dailymomo. That's MOMO.com. You can also look at it up at store/DailyMomo if you want to know. Now, it's currently only on the iOS platform. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So at some point, you'll develop that further.
We're working on Android.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there's always those great divides. Isn't that funny? They gave us the great divide in computers, and they give us the great divide in our mobile devices, too. It's really kind of funny to me. But it is two different ways of thinking, for sure.
But it's completely different kinds of coding, the ways of coding.
Yes, yes. I know. They can't make it easy, can they? But one of the things that you had in the app that I thought was probably critical was the fact that it can record your user's voice and let them hear themselves back. Why is that so important?
Because most of us do not know how we sound. And we don't hear ourselves well. We hear other people well, and when you record your own voice and play back, that's when you really hear your own sound. So when you're learning another second language like English, it's hard for you to imagine how you sound. Even if when you speak it, your brain doesn't register your English accent.
Oh, okay.
So when you actually record and play back, you can hear yourself. And then you think, most of us think, like, that's why other people didn't understand me. No wonder.
Right, because I can't either. there was some research by Dr. David P. Addison. Why is that important to Daily Momo?
He was helping us with the understanding of visual word form area. He's a neuroscientist.
Okay.
So he helps us making the connection between sound and text and how that really helps our brains acquire another language.
So, okay, we're drawing down on our hour here. We've got about 3 minutes left to talk a little bit more about what you've accomplished so far. It's unique on the Daily Momo to have the recording playback, but also unique for people to see text in chunking highlights. What are some of the other uniquenesses that you would say this particular groundbreaking research applied to the app has in this product that you can tell us about?
It can actually give you a score on your pronunciation.
Ah, that's actually really effective.
So you can hear yourself and understand how you sound. And then you take a test and you can see how Americans heard you.
Ah, okay. Now, wider applications to the app other than just English as a second language learners? Is there another way to use the app to apply to other learning areas?
The same principles apply to native speakers who are struggling readers.
I see. Okay.
So if you have, dyslexic children or struggling readers, when they see the words they hear, learning fast, as twice as fast.
Okay, so we're closing in on our hour. What is the most important thing to you that you do with this app, Daily Momo? How do you want to grow this company, Dr. Lee?
Our vision is to empower everyone, and what I mean by that is the overwhelming majority of the world's information is expressed and communicated in English. So without English access, without English skills, you don't have access to that information. So the way we see it is English is the empowerment tool that you need to be successful in the global stage.
Beautifully said. Beautifully said. I'm so thankful for your commitment of time to bring about a really nice resolution to a a really crippling problem. And I think that's what I love about my show is that, you know, we always bring a little edge of hope to some scenarios. And I think it can be said that you've definitely done that for a lot of the struggling students that want to learn English, want to perfect English, and don't really want to be sidelined because of the problem. So I thank you for your work, and I thank you for coming on KUCI and telling us your story.
Thank you for having me.
All right.
It was fun.
It was good. Good to have you. Thank you. And up next is going to be Matt Kaplan with Planetary Radio. And just before that is Counterspin. And we thank you very much for joining KUCI programming. And we look forward to having you back again next week. Bye for now.